Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. I've got a question for our listeners. Are you looking to upgrade your creative abilities? Well, the new book, Core Creativity, by Dr. Ron Alexander, offers a ways to go beyond the limitations of ordinary creativity to access the core creativity that comes from the very center of your being, that is, the depths of your unconscious. Dr. Ron Alexander has decades of experience working with core creatives, using mindfulness practices, meditation and visualizations, habits and mindsets of the highly creative people. He has discovered that anyone can experience the flow of ideas as if it came from an infinitely abundant source. Dr. Ron is the executive director of the Open Mind Training Institute, practices mindfulness-based mind-body psychotherapy, and is a leadership coach in Santa Monica, California. Dr. Ron and I really do have a lot to talk about with that. Let's bring on our guest. Dr. Ron Alexander, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. Pleasure to be here with you.
Be a fun conversation. Listen, you know, I was wondering, creativity, you know, 20 years ago, I don't believe we heard a lot about creativity, and it is becoming more and more of a subject in our culture today. It's become an increasingly popular topic on podcast circuits, I find. Do you have any idea why do you think that is so?
Well, when I was shopping my book, my first agent, who is up in Marin County, she said to me, she read the proposal, and she said, "Are you going to have a section on creativity and microdosing?" And that's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, in the sense that I haven't specialized in that. I'm more on the side of mindfulness meditation, Tai Chi,
right.
Yoga, things like
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked her, I said, well, I certainly can, because when I was in my 20s, I actually interned at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center in Baltimore, Maryland, under the esteemed psychedelic researcher, Dr. Stanislav Grof. And so we got talking, and I said, why would you be interested in having 3, 4, 5 pages or even a chapter on microdosing and creativity? And she said, well, I've been up here in the Bay Area, and I've watched for the last 20 years this enormous shift towards the subject of both creativity but also microdosing, in that a lot of people in Silicon Valley, whether they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, they go off to this Burning Man festival every year, and of course they partake in all sorts of
Yeah, but
stuff.
That's not microdosing at Burning Man.
You're right. That's megadosing. But she said that the valley has become on fire with an interest in creativity, and that almost everyone who approaches her with a book proposal, or in her case, she also gives talks, as I do, on the subject of creativity, and that young people and people of all ages throughout America and throughout the world, I teach in Europe, I teach in Asia, I teach in Australia, it's just a vast interest in how to feel and how to be more creative.
That's interesting. You know, as I was thinking about this, it occurred to me, do you think the failure, I don't know failure, but the circumstance of not really exploring creativity may be one of the results of our educational system that seems to love yes and no, right and wrong answers, all left brain, that there is no move for creativity, that, you know, I used to take, you know, the tests where it's, you know, A, B, and C, and I would say, well, depending on the context, both B and D work. But, you know, you've got to give me a better context. And I always had such a struggle with that. But because it leaves no room for creativity. What are your feelings on that?
Well, I think both the school systems have been in the past. Fortunately, I attended a school in Boston where I had a very unique opportunity to take a music appreciation class. And the teacher, he used to wear overalls in construction boots in a tweed jacket to work, and he was a musician, a jazz musician, who would moonlight at night in the clubs in Boston, you know, on weekends. And he turned a very sterile and a kind of very stale music room into this illustrious environment where you walk into class, and instead of sitting at a desk, there was a drum set, there was an acoustic guitar, there was a trumpet, there was bongos, there was an electric guitar, there was an organ, there was a piano. And one of the things that lit me up on fire was that music class, where what he taught was, it's really important to explore spontaneity and to bring your creativity to the foreground. And that if after 5 or 10 minutes you didn't really take to the acoustic guitar, he'd say, well, put it down and then go over to the organ and let your fingers just run across the keys. And so part of the problem, Charlie, is that in our school systems, there's the emphasis on the development of the left brain, you know,
right,
function,
right,
organizing, clarifying, giving order to things, and not enough emphasis in our education, in our school systems, on play and on spontaneity and on creativity, which is far more right-brained oriented. But the good news is here in Los Angeles, and also down a bit down your way in Encinitas, there are several school systems up here. Most all the private school systems employ teachers that teach a class. They call it the Mysteries. And basically, it's a class where kids sit down in a circle and they do the council process. They pass a talking stick and they get to talk. And then 10, 15, 20 minutes of every class, they either start or they finish with some form of mindfulness meditation, or they do some yoga, or there's some instruction in transcendental meditation. And that's through LA Unified, and most of the private schools also emphasize this. And recently I was talking with one of my creativity clients that I'm coaching on Wall Street, and he's an associate of a fellow named Dan Loeb, and Dan Loeb's very into Ashtanga yoga, and his wife actually bought, I think, the franchise in America, the use of the name, and I believe he donated either $500,000 or $1 million to the Encinitas school system in North San Diego County, so that the kids could study yoga and mindfulness.
Well, that's so that was his approach for creativity, is yoga and mindfulness.
Yes.
Yeah, just as you are, and we'll talk about it in a bit, just as you are, in the Open Mind Training Center, Training Institute.
Yes, and the other domain where children often lose their creativity, of course, is in the home. And so, for example, I was doing a house call, a family therapy house call, about 10 years back. And sometimes when I do that, I sit and I spend, you know, the entire day, you know, shadow the family throughout their daily habits, or a half a day. And there was this three-year-old child, the little son, and he was walking around talking on an imaginary cell phone. And the mother kept admonishing him to stop doing that and to stop acting as if he was talking to someone, that there was nobody there on the line. So when she went off into the kitchen, I picked up my imaginary cell phone, and his name was, well, let's just call him Benji for the moment. And we had this incredible conversation, imaginary cell phone to imaginary cell phone. Now, that's two examples. One, a very bad example of where a parent admonishes a child to actively being creative and imaginative. The right approach is the approach that I did, which is talk back and amplify and emphasize the child's creativity. Who knows? That little boy could become the next Steve Jobs or Bill Gates just by playing around his living room with an imaginary cell phone.
Yeah, you talk about imagination. As I was reading on you, and I would love to hear more about core creativity, it seems to be that imagining, visioning, and innovating are key variables in your process. And you know what I like about that, imagining, visioning, and innovating, that is not exclusive to artists in the fine arts, to musicians and writers and actors. It's imagining, visioning, and innovating. It's for everybody. That really kind of opens up the world to where those that think they are not creative are indeed have a creative aspect to them that's very important, and they don't realize it.
Yeah, and that's part of why I wrote the book Core Creativity, which we originally wanted to call it Core Creativity for Everyone, but we settled on Core Creativity with its emphasis on that we are all capable of being really creative. Now, that doesn't mean that we're all going to be the next Mick Jagger or Eric Clapton or Paul McCartney.
No, and that's honestly, Dr. Ron, I struggle with that, with calling Paul McCartney and me equal creatives. Paul McCartney has something special. There is a giftedness to him. You know, Paul McCartney, I've read where he says, I wake up in the morning and I hear ditties, and I could write 10 ditties that would be bestsellers because I just hear them. He's got a special gifting, but that doesn't mean other people are not creative. They're just not creative like the people you just mentioned that have a special gift.
That's right. And I think we can divide creativity into many different categories, but the way I chunk it down is just two simple forms, which is creativity in the ordinary sense of the term, as you just used some really useful terms, being able to imagine, being able to invent, being able to innovate. So that's something that I feel every human being on the planet is capable of doing that.
Yeah.
And then?
Otherwise, we wouldn't have chairs. I mean, it's something as simple as chairs. That was a creative act.
Right. And once I was in Australia, and I was in the part of Australia where the wood had dried up, and some of the Aborigines were looking around, scurrying around because the forest, because of the drought and the rain, had disappeared. And there was some wooden chairs, and these Aborigines came out of the wood and picked up the chairs. And I said to them, well, what are they going to do with them? And my friend said, we're probably going to use it for firewood.
Yeah.
So that, see, there's innovation. Like, an Aborigine looks at a wooden chair and sees firewood. That's being imaginative. Then you have, like the Paul McCartneys, for example, when he came up with the lyrics and the melody for his masterpiece Yesterday, and it's been re-recorded over 375 times, what was amazing about that, and he's the first person to admit it, is he dreamt about it and got up in the middle of the night, spoke it into a tape recorder, went back to sleep, And upon awakening, he became horrified that, oh my God, I think I just experienced the download of a masterpiece and I can't remember it, or something along that line. But then his girlfriend at the time reminded him that he had talked it into the tape recorder or written it down. And creatives who have extraordinary talent in the arts, in film, in music that I've worked with, painters, and many of these are in the book, they all say the same thing, that it's a parallel track to ordinary individuals like you and me, is that they both have to work at perfecting, and the third stage of core creativity, manifesting, even with an extraordinary gift. I was once at a salon, and there was this very renowned, famous for singing, acting, writing, and directing. And so I had the opportunity to ask her, well, what do you think about your gift? Did it just sort of come easy? And we were in the food line, and she kind of spit some of her food out and started laughing. And she said, well, look, just between me and you, I know it's a mitzvah, that it's a blessing that comes from God. But then there's the other 250,000 hours that I've put into all those categories.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a partnership.
Yes.
And it works that way. I was thinking of, who was I thinking of? I was thinking of someone, and now I've forgotten who I was thinking of in the realm of creativity. We'll just have to skip that. But as I was reading through your website, you didn't call them goals, but as I read through, there appeared to be, in your definition of core creativity, there appeared to be what sounded like three goals. Now, you may say these are not goals, but they kind of felt that way. One was true innovation, two was radical reinvention, and three was sustainable, gratifying changes to yourself or to your organization. Would you say those would be sort of goals of core creativity, innovation, reinvention, and sustainable, gratifying changes?
Yes, I would. And I would say that those are three aspirations in addition to goals, because when we use the term goal, we usually refer to that there's an end result.
Right. I like that. That's really good.
Yeah.
And so you called them, what did you call them?
Aspirations.
Aspirations, yeah.
Because
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. See, you like that, Charlie, and that's good. When we aspire towards something, it necessitates that we link together aspiration with inspiration. And then, as I just mentioned, in the third part of that triangle is perspiration, meaning focus, hard work, perseverance.
Yeah. In aspiration, how do you feel about what's commonly used in creativity, about the muse? How do you feel, where does she fit in your formula, or does she?
She definitely fits, because the Greeks understood creativity metaphorically, in terms of nine manifestations of goddesses.
Right.
Yeah. And so really the muse is nine goddesses symbolic.
Right.
And in many of the creators I interviewed, they often either had, like Lennon and McCartney, and then later, like Lennon and Yoko Ono, she was very much a muse for John Lennon creatively, because they both shared art as their foundations or their base to creativity, and then of course they both had a love for music. And
can I tell you a story on that? You know what I read, because this is my day. I was at school at UCLA in the late 60s, so I was right in the middle of hippiedom and all that, and
fabulous time.
And do you know how I heard that John and Yoko met? that Yoko was doing a presentation. Now, I have no idea. This could be total myth, but it's still a great story. And that Yoko had a painting that had a nail, and it had a hammer hanging by a string. And that was it. That was the painting. And John Lennon was the only one that went up and nailed the nail in. And she says, "You're the first one that understood my painting."
Yeah,
and understood what I was trying to do with it.
That's true. And so then, that's a great story, Charlie. And so then 2 nights later, he went to another art gallery to find her in London. And in this art gallery, she did a whole thing on white. And white symbolically means the beginning. It's we invent and we imagine from the blank, and white is the blank. And he went to the back of the gallery, and there was a ladder, a gigantic step ladder, and he climbed up to the very top. And again, there was a string, and this time there was a magnifying glass, and it said, "Look up," on the magnifying glass on the string. And so he takes it and he looks up on the ceiling, and there's in tiny little letters painted YES, yes. Burst out laughing, and he said, "I was thinking it was going to say piss off or screw you." And he said there was just something about yes where he realized, this is the girl for me.
How fun. That's a fun story. You know, as you talk, as I hear you talk, and we're going to take a break right after this, but as I hear you talk about perspiration, it reminds me of a recent book by Cal Newport that's called Deep Thought. Are you familiar with that?
No. Tell me about it.
It's really a very, very interesting book, and he talks about times that we need to have 2 to 3 hours a day for creative people and people working on projects that you just can't have interruption. You have to be very, very deeply in thought. So it's a whole book about setting time aside where there are no emails, no interruptions, no anything. All you are doing is working on the project that you're working on. He's a physicist, and he went to MIT, and he teaches, I think, at Georgetown, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But I really like this idea of deep thought. I've been struggling for a couple of months of writing a book that I was very clear about, and I'm not clear now, but this deep work really does mean something to me, and it sounds a lot like what you're talking about as well.
Yeah. In my book, I discuss the importance of daily rituals for anyone who wants to increase and facilitate and amplify their creativity. And a couple of the daily rituals that I suggest is to spend time, quiet time, each day. You can meditate, if that's what you're drawn to, in practice mindfulness or Christian contemplative prayer or whatever. Or you can sit quietly and look out the window and just be curious and say, "I wonder what my unconscious mind is interested in exploring. I wonder what my unconscious mind would like to teach me today."
What do you do with the monkey mind?
Well, the monkey mind needs training. And that comes from, that's a great question, Charlie. The monkey mind, in all the meditative systems in Asia, they all use the same parable, which is visualize that your house, your mind and yourself is a house, and that you have wild monkeys, a wild monkey that runs around from room to room. And if you've ever traveled to Asia, as I have many, many times.
And the monkey just tears up your room.
Exactly. And the monkey will wreak havoc. It will take all your food. It will tear apart your car. And so the task is to train and harness the energy of the monkey mind rather than to try to extinguish it like pouring cold water onto a fire.
Right. That never works.
No, never works. And most people, unfortunately, think that meditation or contemplation or even sitting quietly is about it trying to extinguish thought, which you can't do. And why would you want to extinguish thought? Because imagination, innovation comes from thought. One of the things I learned when I was studying in India was this yogi said to me, all thought is creative. All thought is creative. Set your mind on what you want, and then it will manifest. Set your mind on what you want, and it will manifest. So what we want to do is we want to corral the monkey mind with any form of meditation or contemplation or prayer or quiet, but then harness and harvest all of the energy that's bubbling up inside of the monkey mind.
See, you are talking to a man of ritual, so I won't describe all my rituals, but you know, I do have daily rituals. Tell me, how do we help people who just feel like they physically, you know, they could be parents, they could be in a number of situations, but, you know, I'm retired, so I can do what I want, kind of when I want to do it. But how do we get them to find 15 to 30 minutes just to, you know, to break that cycle of crisis and micromanagement and all of that? What do you suggest? You know, I know you coach people, and you've got to be coaching them in this. How do you help them in that area?
Well, the number one way to help them is first to challenge whatever their resistances are when they say, "I don't have time." There's an old saying from the Buddha that when people used to say to the Buddha, "I don't have time," the Buddha would say, "That's all there is time." And so I help people overcome their resistance that they feel like they don't have time, but there's always time to be stolen. Even in managing a family of 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 5 children, there's time that you can steal.
How much time do you need?
I would say the minimum is 10 minutes, and a good maximum would be 20 minutes a day. Ideally, 10 to 12 minutes twice a day. But that's what you need as a minimum if you want to explore your creativity and you want to explore learning to imagine, learning to invent, learning to innovate, and learning to nurture and nourish the self. You do need time. So another fix that I came up with.
You know what I want to do? I want to hear that fix, but I think that's really important. But we need to take a quick break. We're talking about getting time on your schedule to meditate, spend time in mindfulness, and we'll come right back to your third suggestion. Hi there. You're listening to Charlie Hedges in the Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am very pleased to have a very special guest, Dr. Ron, who has written The Core Creative. And we are talking right now, one of the things that is really critical about creativity is actually times of silence and times of pondering your own essence and what it is you want to do and might like to do. And Dr. Ron was going to give us his third point on how we might be able to sustain or discover opportunity for that kind of self-reflection.
So the third fix is a time management fix. And at first, most people are very resistant to this. And it can be done in the evening, or it can be done in the morning, which is go to bed 15 to 20 minutes early, do some mindfulness meditation, or sit quietly, or pull out your smartphone and listen to a meditation app. The biggest fix, though, is I say to everyone, especially parents who have kids, get up 20 minutes earlier, Monday through Friday. And that's where the time window is. And as soon as I encourage people that they can actually do that, and they're not going to, over time, it's not going to make them more tired, what they discover is something that I learned from Tony Robbins. He emphasizes a thing that's called the hour of power. Well, that's really unrealistic for parents, and it's also unrealistic with all the people that I coach in the entertainment industry who are executives, and the guys on Wall Street in New York City that I coach. But if I say to them, use 20 minutes, 10 minutes of that is going to be for quiet meditation. 5 minutes of that is going to be just spontaneous writing in what I call in my first book. In you write each morning the mindfulness journal. And then the last 5 minutes is just sitting quietly and receiving the download of whatever it is. And that's where people start to feel inspired. Because at first, everyone thinks, well, I don't have anything to feel inspired about, or I don't feel creative. But if you sit and do those the segments as I just laid them out, over time, you will not only have aspirations that you can work towards accomplishing, but you'll feel more passionate and you'll feel more inspiration. In the last 5 minutes, I tell everyone, read something that inspires you, and read something that's outside of your own bailiwick, like something that you wouldn't ordinarily read to be inspired by. It's very, very important. And almost all of the human potential coaches that I studied with all said that taking time to read daily pays off tenfold. Yeah,
and you know, and you don't have to, you don't have to read pages and pages and pages. I practice, you know, a long-standing Christian practice called Lectio Divina. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, but I am familiar with the Christian practice of.
Yeah, we talked about mysticism.
Yeah.
Well, Lectio Divina is a form of reading. So, Lectio, you read, and it's typically you know, I read either mystical text or I'll read biblical text, but I'm reading definitely inspirational texts, texts that inspire me to think more deeply and to think outside the norm, and. The idea of Lectio is that you read until something hits you. So you could read for a paragraph and you could read for two or three pages. And then when something hits you, you highlight that, and you know, then it's called oratio, and you say a quick prayer, and then there's meditation, that you meditate on that passage and write on that passage, and then it ends with contemplating the whole process. Of what meant something to me, what did I ask for, what did I meditate on, and what did I contemplate on. And that's, you know, that's probably a little longer than what most people have, but it can be done in 20 to 30 minutes.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I think it was Thomas Aquinas who had the steps that you practice each day. And again...
This has been... Early first millennia.
And I think what we see when we study creatives and as well as mystics and philosophers that inspire us throughout history, all the way back to the Greeks and the Romans, to the Egyptians and up to the modern day, is that almost all creatives have had a spiritual orientation to the portal of their imagination.
And you know, that's a very interesting, because it's not true in all denominations of Christianity, just in a handful, but in a handful there is, with the mystics, there is that openness to learning and seeing something afresh and seeing something anew and seeing the divine in a whole different picture than what has been necessarily taught. And I really like that open-mindedness that you're talking about.
Yeah, and it, when we do a review of the Christian mystics, St. Teresa of Avila, who talks about that the interior of the castle is the room where the diamond is. It's the jewel.
Well, it's where Jesus resides.
Yes, that's it. And you have St. John.
St. John of the Cross, yeah. Both Carmelites. I'm reading on them both again for the fourth time right now.
And these are all mystics and deeply spiritual beings who revered the sense of the daily prayer, the daily quiet.
Yes. And that is my concern. That's what, how do we get, because I know a lot of people want, I'd speak with a lot of people that would like relief from the stress and the crisis. And the only way they can have that is by having some alone, quiet time. And yet that is an anathema to an American. You know, we are supposed to be productive. I know when I retired, there was two things that I struggled with. And one was uselessness and boredom. And, you know, that just talks about our whole American mindset of not necessarily dwelling on the potential creative aspects within us.
Yes, and mystics and people that practice spiritual forms of meditation, contemplation, prayer, all give reference to, there's a great deal of gold to be mined for in boredom, in restlessness. There's really good energy.
Do you know how hard that is?
Well, it's hard, but like I said, just as it's hard to get up 20 minutes early in the cold of winter when, you know,
yeah,
you want to have your warm feet, maybe touching somebody else's warm feet, or, you know, the heat hasn't come on just yet. But once you do it, it's just so invigorating.
Yeah, that once you make it a habit, it's just not a big deal.
That's right. And the distraction falls away. And as you said, which is a really good point, Charlie, Americans, you know, we are filled with distraction. I mean, you have the news 24 hours a day on 500 channels. You have smartphones, iPads, tablets, computers, social media. And so there's a never-ending way to create avoidance from solitude, quiet, contemplative reflection. But that's where invention comes from. And that's where, if you want to reinvent how you live, if you want to reinvent the way that you work, or reinvent the way you communicate to people, it comes from being able to sit quietly and just wait for the downloads to emerge. And I talk about, in the book, three different modes of downloads. There's a download from what we call the collective unconscious, and that's where Paul McCartney got his Yesterday from, and Beethoven and Mozart. They said that they would hear it from the divine other. Then there's the upload, which comes from, like, the earth, when we take a walk or we spend time right in nature, go off to a beach for 2 or 3 hours or in a park, then we start to feel like almost like something's coming from the earth. And it's coming up to
right.
us. And then the third portal is what I call the inload. And that's what comes from the heart, you know, center of your intuition and your feelings and your sensations, that sense of the gut instinct, and things that come from the body. And so those are three pathways to start spending time exploring.
I love that. I think you know, if we were to apply those, it would be helpful for us all. I think you and I talked about Blaise Pascal's statement that, you know, the problem with every human being is the inability to sit in a room by himself for any length of time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. This is... Go ahead, and then we'll close with this.
Sure. And lastly, then, is take a risk. Like, don't stay in your lane. And I give you the example. Like, break the rules. Steve Jobs used to fly to Kyoto with his family on his jet. And he used to take... He loved to listen to music. And he'd take all his CD players, like six or seven Sony Walkmans and whatever, and they all were lousy and created flack and noise. And he was meditating in one of the Kyoto Zen temples, and he took out his hand, and he imagined what it would be like if I had a device where I could have my entire CD collection, my entire record collection also, in the palm of my hand. And then shortly after that, he meets up with Johnny Ivey, and they create the first iPod. So don't stay in your lane. Like, don't say, well, lousy Sony Walkmans, that's all we've got. Start to think about, well, what else could we create? What else?
Yes. Yes, that there is, we're not nearly as limited as we like to think we are.
We need to think differently. We need to imagine differently. And we need to feel differently.
Oh, I love that. Let's wrap it up with that. We need to think differently, need to imagine. Feel differently, and imagine differently. And there is, you know, I'm a bit of a creative myself, and I'm just, you know, I'm just so resonating with everything you're saying.
Well, I can hear it in everything that you've shared. I can hear that resonance of creativity. You've got the creativity vein pouring through you.
The creativity vein. Yeah, the muse that won't leave me alone.
All of your listeners, I just hope that they'll walk away from listening to this and say, well, what's my creativity vein?
Yes, yes. Great suggestion. Dr. Ron Alexander, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been terrific. Tell me, I'm going to put in the show notes how to get a hold of your book, Core Creativity. What is the website you would like people to go to?
CoreCreativity.com and or RonaldAlexander.com.
I think I can use CoreCreativity.com as a
great.
Great one. That would be perfect. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you and your book and all that you're thinking, and thank you for all the people you are serving.
Well, thank you too, Charlie. I really enjoyed the rapport and the repartee between the two of us.
Thank you. Likewise. Well, that's all for today, everybody. This is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.